Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast. It's a bunch of baseball nerds talking about the Phillies on radio.com and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Yo! It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. Jack Fritz, that yo was for the Philadelphia Phillies.
What?
Who let him get hot? That yo was for Andrew Painter and the rest of the draft class. And that yo was for all the awesome people we met on I Hopes Night. What up, buddy?
James?
Buddy.
Why not the Phils, baby? Why not the Phils? Oh, they got a closer? They got their offense is averaging like 8.7 runs per game since the last 2 weeks.
Like 8.7?
Everything's starting to come together. Vince Velasquez is a real Philly guy. Listen, it's a good time to be a Phils fan. I mean, we're two podcasts removed from an absolute meltdown. And now we're back.
I'm pretty sure our last podcast was named Am I an Idiot?
Yes.
So, yeah.
No,
yeah.
It was. And sure, listen, maybe we're idiots, James, but I don't care. I just don't care anymore. I'm so ready to just jump in this pool like a cannonball and believe in this baseball team again. And you want to know why, James?
Oh, you really? Of all people to hear right. Those words come out of your mouth. I think the entire listening audience was just like dropped whatever they were holding, spit out whatever they were drinking. Jack Fritz is ready to buy in.
I know, but this is the best I have felt about them in like forever. Because you want to know why, James?
Oh, buddy.
You want to know why?
Deep.
You want to know why? You want to know why?
Yeah, I do.
Because even when they lose, it's a normal loss. It's not the most painful way possible. They just lose 8-3, and they mix it in, and it's not even like, oh, that was absolutely dreadful and a miserable experience. Like, they've lost twice in the last week, and it's like, you know what? That's a perfectly fine loss. Like, we'll take that loss. Was there a little frustration things? Sure. But, like, even when they lose, they don't play that bad. And I like the vibes from the team. You know, I've really liked the home run hat. I like how they're acting in the dugout. For the first time, I felt like they are a team. And I just feel like that core that we have talked about, you know, having to come in from the outside and have to come together and rebuild the Phillies culture, I feel like they're doing that. And for a lot of people, their litmus test was this weekend. And they took 2 of 3 from the Red Sox in Boston. They took 3 of 4 in Chicago. Those are two tough places to play. I know the Cubs stink, but the litmus test has been passed.
Yeah. Look, I'm as optimistic. I'm not where you are.
Would you stop?
I am as optimistic as I've been about the team in a while. Like they're like you said. Look, I said going into that, if they go into Boston and win 2 of 3, like. I'll take it seriously. I won't just throw it to the side and say, oh, you know, like this team, they never get hot when I think they're going to, which is still true, Jack. I mean, they're still 500 team, but look, they won back-to-back road series. They went in and faced a good team and beat them on the road, Jack. Like that sentence alone is not something we've heard in a few years. And look, the Red Sox are a good team and they also did it in a, you know, obviously for fans, the more terrifying fashion, but they lose the first and then bounce back and win the second two. And that last one, like a gutty win, man. Like that's a gutty win with Ranger giving you 7 outs and a bullpen game when you find out that, you know, 4 important players, all guys who could have played and 2 of them who would have played in that game, couldn't play for you because of the COVID stuff. You know, we'll get into that at some point, I'm sure. But but for them to come back out like that in that spot and find a way to win the baseball game, you know, getting big performances from big spots, you know, Ronald Torres coming in and just hitting, you know, big hits and Christopher Sanchez giving him 3 and all that stuff.
And that's what winning ball clubs do, James.
Exactly. That's where I was going. It's like, I'm not ready to anoint them yet, but they're starting to look like a team that's kind of pulling it together and playing a brand, at least, of winning baseball, Jack.
And that's all we asked for them. You know, that's all we asked from them. But
a competent major league team. That,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you look at them now, and it's like, you know, the lineup is healthy. The lineup is coming together. Whenever Bohm gets back, then you'll get back to the 1-8 that is deep and it's healthy. And the fact that Torres now is a guy that can bring it off the bench. Luke Williams that can bring it off the bench. Brad Miller in a spot start that we did not rip Joe Girardi for.
No.
Can hit three homers.
Dude, all right. We never lie to those listeners. I'm so mad at myself because as we were tearing Girardi up for that lineup in our longer just tear down of Girardi in general, I almost said at the end of it, you know, Brad Miller's going to hit a home run tonight. Because we just said all that, like that's definitely gonna happen, and I didn't say it, and it wouldn't have been as good if I said multiple homers, obviously. But I'm mad at myself, Jack. I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah, Brad Miller going out and doing that was hilarious. Also, it is quite funny that he does that once, and everyone's like, "Well, trade Reese." It's like, come on, like relax. He had a good game. He's a good bench piece. I mean, Brad Miller could be a folk hero here if his team goes on a little bit of a run. But like you're seeing like. Are the Phillies deep? I mean,
hey, look, they're like, we talked about this last time though. Like that's the thing where I think we had such a perception of the bench as being this just devastatingly bad thing because of the center field situation to start the season. And because of all these injuries and the bench having to get deeper and deeper and deeper. And as we've talked about a million times, like the Phillies' real problems are with the roster depth, you know, the ability to just plug guys in, bring them up. Like, you know, we're the Dodgers. It's like, oh, major league, like, you know, every draft class. Oh, these guys just all make the majors. Like the Phillies don't have that. So, you know, when you start to go deeper into that reservoir, so to speak, it makes the bench look horrible. And when you have the starting lineup back and everyone's healthy, it's like, oh, you know what? Brad Miller, Torres, Luke Williams, like, yeah, I can get down with that.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes those guys even more valuable. And the fact that, you know, now it's funny because Girardi hasn't really, you know, been double switching as much, but it makes the double switches make more sense. Like now late in games, you can put either Luke Williams or Torres at third for a little defensive replacement. You can do those kind of things. If you want to, you know, substitute out Reese, you could put JT at first and Nappy behind the plate. You know, if McCutchen, you feel like looks a step slow, like they have guys that can actually do it. So, you know, and that's how you win in National League Baseball. You know, National League Baseball is almost a war of attrition in a way. Like you got to have guys that are ready to go, ready to come off the bench that can perform and step up. And, you know, it's nice that right now your stars are playing like your stars. I mean, they're not all doing it in the same night, but like one, it'll be Harper. One night it'll be Hoskins, one night it'll be Kutch, one night it'll be Gene, but then it's supplemented by the Ronald Torreses. And it's just, you know, it's something, and again, we said this last podcast, but if you're going to believe in the Phillies and believe in them in one way, it has to be because of what the offense is doing. You're not buying into the Phillies because their pitching staff goes on a two-week stretch where, you know, they're dominating teams or their bullpen has 2 weeks, although they haven't blown a save in 10 games. So pop.
Hey, we got Hector pitching in like the fifth inning of games.
Listen,
like,
anytime you can bring a closer into a fifth inning game, that's not a bad that's not a bad situation. But like, if you're gonna buy into any part of this team, it comes down to the offense. Like the offense is the thing that they are built on, and they were built to out hit their mistakes. They have a good 1-3 that on most nights should get the job done. 4-5 is just a weird spot right now. Like Velasquez is very hit or miss, been more missed recently. The Phillies are 6-1 in Matt Moore starts, which is ridiculous, but he's not pitching like too bad. He's keeping them in games.
It's like 4 innings, 2 runs. It's like a high end opener, Jack.
Yeah, just like Jacob DeGrom. He's also a high end opener.
how do you say these things? Like, how do these things just pop out of your mouth?
Listen, he's a fine pitcher. He's got some good stuff.
I think he's okay.
I think he's got a shot. But the truth of the matter is, I think he's averaging like 5 2/3 a start. And it's if you really want to be like, I hate the comparisons between him and what Bob Gibson did in 1968. Like Bob Gibson threw, I think, 17 complete games that year.
Dude, the most amazing Bob Gibson stat of that whole thing is I think it was in June and July, he had 12 starts, 12 complete games.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. I mean, like, that's a different thing that's happening.
Right. And Jacob deGrom's having a nice little season. But
I loved it. I didn't see this coming. Like, of all the things I could have seen coming, this was not one that I saw. Respect.
He's a really good opener. So
an opener, like, yeah. Probably the best opener.
Yeah, he's
ever.
And then he turns it over, and that's why their record is so poor in the games that he starts, because he can only go 5 2/3 innings.
Yeah, I mean, he's no Taiwan Walker, right?
No. And the fact of the matter is that if Zach Wheeler was on that staff, that he would be the ace of them. He pitches more innings, and he strikes out more guys. Who's been more valuable this year, Zach Wheeler or Jacob deGrom?
This has gone way longer than I expected, and deeper.
Yep.
The commitment is super impressive.
Yeah, I think it's impressive, I got to be honest. It's a pat on the back moment. Like, there's probably people out there listening right now. It's like, is he serious? Can you tell if I'm serious or not?
Never, that's Jack. That's the what point. Makes you special, buddy.
That's the point.
That makes you special.
Yep. Yep. So,
how did we even get here? How are we talking about Jacob deGrom right now?
I don't know.
Somehow we got from Matt Moore to Jacob deGrom.
Oh, we talked about how Matt Moore. Oh, this is how we got there. We talked about how Matt Moore and Jacob deGrom are the two best openers in baseball right now.
How do I pivot from this? Like, where do I go from here?
Fills are hot. Say the fills are hot.
I look at my notes and I'm like, what do I do here? Like, where do I go?
Well, why don't you
fills
think on your feet?
Fills are hot, Jack.
Yeah, think on your feet.
Yeah, not my specialty. Just kidding. All right. Well, how about this? Two things. We'll get to the Vinny fan thing in a sec. But speaking of the Matt Moore Vinny thing, there is a name out there. And we talk a lot about trades. And, they got to get closers. Is Dombrowski going to buy or sell or whatever? There's one easy buy in the sense that if he looks good, it literally only costs you money. Where are you at on Cole Hamels?
I am firmly in the camp of bring him back. Like, there's really no downside to it. Obviously, we'll see how he throws and all that stuff. But, like the Phillies need help. And even if Matt Moore continues pitching well and all that stuff, and Vince Velasquez is doing many things where it's good, bad, pretty good starts. Bringing in Cole Hamels is, like, not the worst thing in the world. And I'm not... Like, I'm not, like, the nostalgia, bring the guy.
No,
like,
we've heard you rip Cole Hamels mercilessly.
It's not.
Your Cole Hamels shots are the most unwarranted thing that's probably ever happened in the history of this podcast, so we know.
He cost them the 09 World Series. But, but either way, like, I still love Cole Hamels. It is not meant to be negative. I just feel like he doesn't get pointed out enough that they should have been back-to-back World Series champs. But bringing him back just makes too much sense. And it's a good PR move. Let the guy finish his career here. He's an all-time great and that kind of stuff. But it just makes too much sense. And, there's a lot of people that say he's done and all that stuff. But, I mean, a year ago, obviously last year in Atlanta, just couldn't get healthy and all that stuff. But he's had time off now. Like, for the Cubs, he had a 3.8 ERA and 27 starts. He took down 141 innings. Like, I'll take that. I mean, obviously we'd take that. And I think the key point in why I would bring Hamels in is I saw, even when he didn't pitch last year, what he did for that Braves staff. And the way that those guys were able to lean on Cole Hamels and kind of let him be that veteran mentor to them. And Max Fried had an unbelievable year, and he's taken a huge step back this year. You bring in Cole Hamels here, and he can kind of be what Jamie Moyer was for him in 2006. And it just helps make Aaron Nola better. It helps make Zach Eflin better. Wheeler's pretty established, so I don't think he's going to help him. But I just think that you have a guy in Cole Hamels who has done it before, who's won on big stages, and I think he's a good guy that these young players can lean on. That's not Jake Arrieta. Like, Jake Arrieta was our veteran leader a couple years ago, and you substitute that for Cole Hamels. So I just think it makes too much sense, and I firmly, like, there's no reason why, if Cole Hamels is healthy and looks pretty good, that he should not be a Philly. Like, they need him. They're 3.5 games back. It's go time. And this could be what basically Pedro did in 09.
Yeah, like you said, it's literally a no-brainer. Obviously, it's all dependent upon seeing him pitch and he's healthy and he looks good, but it's just money. It's just money. That's it. That's it. John, Mr. Middleton, you've talked big game. Like, this is the kind of thing you do. You know, if you really want to go for it here in that, you know, sense of you're in a horrible division, you have a chance to actually win it this year and actually make the playoffs for the first time in a decade, you bring back the Phillies legend. You bring back the World Series MVP. And you, because it's one of those things that you point out, Jack, it's just like a no-lose thing. It, even if Cole Hamels came back and stunk, everyone would be happy Hamels was here because he's Cole Hamels and he's ending his career in Philly's pinstripes. Like, it's just such a no-brainer. And I don't think he's going to stink if he looks okay. Like, he's not going to stink more than Vince Velasquez. I'll tell you that much. He's not going to stink more than the best opener on the planet, Matt Moore. You know, I think this is such an easy move, and it's just, it's going to be a real window into, I think, also what they might do at the trade deadline in terms of adding from a cash perspective. Because if John Middleton's not willing to pony up for Cole Hamels, which, you know, for half a season prorated, like, what are we talking about? A few million bucks? Like, you know, I think that's a real concern for the trade deadline coming up.
Well, but also they could just believe that he's done, and
that's true too. Again, the caveat at the beginning is it's all dependent upon that, like the showcase and how he looks and all that stuff. But if there are multiple teams bidding for him because he looks good, like you're his team, like you have to be able to make this happen.
And let's put it this way: if he goes elsewhere and helps a team to a pennant run, then
oh my god, yeah. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? We'll never forget about it. We'll bring it up all the time, no. As we should.
And listen, even if you sign Cole Hamels, then you still have the chance to add more to the deadline. It's not like Cole Hamels can be your big acquisition, but he's a guy that will help. You know, he's a guy that if you need to go to a 6-man rotation or spread guys out, like he's a guy that can fill in. And it's such a no-brainer. It's such a no-brainer. And I hope they're there on Friday. I hope he looks good, and I hope he's a Philly. You know, I think there's been some hesitancy to bring, you know, guys from that team back because they kind of want to move on to a new chapter. You know, Reese has talked about that a lot. Like, we respect what those guys did, but we want to create our own legacy. But at some point, like, this is too important. And this is a guy that's not going to walk into that clubhouse and think that he's 08 Cole Hamels. Like, he's going to be a Cole Hamels that is, you know, hopefully has some in the tank. And that is a guy that has willfully helped out young pitchers on a Braves staff, not a Philly staff, get better and have the best season of their career. So I really hope they do it. I think they need to do it. And, you know, as long as he is healthy and throwing well, I hope they bring him back.
All right, couple more things before we get to the Jack Fritz draft day extravaganza. I want the whole thing. I want the start to finish.
More than 5 minutes?
I want the, what's going through your head. I want all of it. Yeah, definitely. You can bring it. I don't have anywhere to go. All right. So we'll get to that. Couple things quickly. I mentioned it before, the Vinny fan thing. I feel like we pretty much are aligned in this. Like, stop saying dumb crap to players. You know, no need. Right. I have no problem with how Vinny reacted. Do you have any issues with that?
No. I mean, it's just like, it's just such a like a jackass thing to yell. Like, dude, like, Vinny knows he's not pitching well. You know?
I know. It's like you don't gotta tell. You just gave up 8 runs, all right, in 2 1/3. You don't gotta tell him.
I know. And it's just, I hope he's a Boston fan. Like, I hope it wasn't a Philly fan. You know, it was up in Boston, but I know. It's
let's
hard.
Say this. It definitely wasn't a High Hopes listener.
No. High Hopes listeners are very classy, but yeah.
Would never, Jack. Would never.
It is funny now that Vince is like the most popular athlete in Philly. Like the most popular he's been as a Philly, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, that and the throw from left field.
Yeah,
and the lefty throw to first. That was a fun play too. All right, a couple other things. Let's just quickly talk about it because I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Aaron Nola didn't pitch in Fenway because of this freaking COVID thing. You can't tell anyone to do what to do with their body or whatever, but like, you're a professional baseball player. Like, there is an option for you to not have to go through this. It hurts your team. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to say that I'm going to say, oh, you have to get vaccinated, but I am going to say that as a fan, I'm disappointed that Aaron Nola couldn't pitch in that game because he's not vaccinated. And like, whatever, it is what it is. But, you know, I don't know. The whole situation sucked and it makes you concerned. Like, what happens if that happens in September? What happens if that happens, you know, in October if they make it? I don't know. It's not great, Jack.
Yeah, well, I just the reasoning behind it was just insane.
Oh my God. And the whole art of the Matt Gelb article, which is a great article, but the whole, like, you know, I think the vaccine caused my injury. Brandon Kinstler, just stop. Just stop talking. Just don't talk anymore.
Yeah.
Ever. I don't ever need to hear another Brandon Kinstler quote. Unless it's thanks for the time, Philly. I'll see you another decade.
I think Kinstler is shaping up for a Danny Green like quote on his way out.
Oh, buddy, I could see it.
Yeah, for sure. Guy who's terrible here telling us how to be fans. Yeah, it was frustrating, and it's just like, come on, guys. Like, come on. Let's grow up a little bit.
And LA, they won though. They won, and
yeah,
Ranger.
But it's like it's not like that's gonna happen often.
No,
is being able
no.
to this bullpen being able to bullpen their way through a game.
Well,
I don't think it's gonna work.
Real quick on the Ranger part, and really, any of the other guys like Sanchez, if you want to comment on that. But the Ranger thing, like he was nails, and I know he walked a couple guys in that inning, and people were scared, but he was really not going after them. He was going for Verdugo, and he got him. But like, man, just throwing his changeup in basically any count, he was just. I don't know how it's working as well as it is for as long as it is, but it is, and can it keep up?
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious why it's working. I mean, it's the same exact arm speed as his fastball. His fastball's been up to 95, and he has that little hitch that creates some deception, and it comes out looking like a fastball. It's remarkable. You know, I think it's funny, actually. He didn't even throw his slider much yesterday, and I actually think his slider is his out pitch if you want to throw that more. It's probably more of a pitch to lefties than righties, but I thought he could have mixed it in a couple of bats. Honestly, like the most impressive thing from what Ranger did yesterday is, like, James, I mean, you and I have seen pitchers, in especially Phillies pitchers, in big moments where it's like, oh, the crowd's like on their feet and they're just going crazy, and oh, here comes a back-breaking hit, right? I mean, we've seen that 1,000 times. It always happens in Atlanta, it feels like. But, you know, two straight batters, he goes 3-2, crowds on their feet, you know, getting everything fired up, trying to will the Red Sox to a win. And he drops back-to-back 3-2 changeups. Like, that takes some freaking stones. So the thing about...
And he's had that all year, for what it's worth. I feel like I, you know, anecdotally could think of like 5 times when he's come in, like, bases loaded, one out, or 2 on, no outs, and all that. Like, he always comes into these situations where it's high, high, high leverage, and he's just seemed to never be... Like, he really is, you know, it's a cliche, but he feels like one of those ice in his veins guys.
He is. I mean, that's what he is. Does he have overwhelming stuff? No, he doesn't have overwhelming stuff. Although... I mean, 95 is good. Changeup plays well off of it. And I think the slider is really good to lefties. But, you know, the thing that I have always trusted with Ranger this year is just that he'll come into any spot and it doesn't faze him. You know, he's very calm, and he is not afraid of anyone. He will attack anyone, and not afraid of big moments. And that's what you need from a closer. You need a closer that is flatlined in a way, that is just, you know, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. You know, Hector is a very emotional pitcher. You know, it seems like you can kind of see in Hector when he's, you know, not so sure of his stuff. But with Ranger, you have no idea. Like, he would probably be the best poker player in the history of the world. I mean, all he does there is it's just the same face over and over again. It doesn't matter what the scenario is. So, you know, do I think he's a long-term closer? I don't. But I think at least they have a guy that they can trust in big spots for years to come.
All right, last thing before we get to the Jack Fritz draft day extravaganza. And I have other stuff to get to after and stuff. But how much are you buying in on the second half schedule? Because when you look at it, it is significantly easier. I mean, you look at September alone, you got, you know, 4 against the Rockies. You got a 7-game stretch against the Orioles and the Pirates. There's a bunch of Marlins games scattered over the second half. You know, on the face of it, just scanning through it, it does look like a easier schedule. Atlanta without Acuna, you know, so you got some Nats games in there, all that stuff. You know, the numbers by opponent record, it's the easiest. You know, they had the hardest by opponent record in the first half of any above 500 team. Like, there's all these things. Like, how much you buying into that as a real I mean, like, Baseball Reference has the Phillies as the favorite to win the division, Jack. And Fangraphs has the Mets as like a 75% favorite. So, which just goes to show that, you know, it's really hard to project this far out who's actually going to win a division. But, like, the schedule seems to be a real reason for optimism for a lot of people. Are you one of them?
Yes and no. Yes, because the teams they're playing are terrible. I mean, like, there's a couple of Rocky series. There's a Pirate series. There's, like, their series against legitimately bad teams, my only fear is that it feels like they always play down to the competition. And we haven't, yes. Outside the Cubs series, which they won 3 of 4 in that, like, we never really see them just take care of the competition. So I do think it's great, but man, if they miss the playoffs with this schedule that they have and losing games to the Pirates, to the Rockies and these teams would just make
Diamondbacks.
Be awful.
The Diamondbacks have a run differential of minus like 147 or something. It's insane.
Oh, they are a terrible team. I think they lost
seven games. Phillies have 7 games against the Diamondbacks, 4 of which on the road, and the Diamondbacks are like the worst road team ever.
Yeah, listen, they stink, but
the schedule is so easy, Jack, when you look at it, especially compared to the first half. Like, it is like just even on the face of it, just scrolling through, looking at it quickly, it is noticeably easier than the first.
Well, I mean, remember heading into June, we were like, how are they going to survive June? And then they went 12-12, and it was like, all right, we survived June. So obviously I'm fired up that they're playing those teams. It's just that they have routinely let me down those spots. So,
until they beat the Marlins, we're not going to believe they're going to
beat them. But I will say, going on the road against the Cubs, it was the most business-like they had looked. It was the most, they were able to create their own energy in the dugout. And I think that's important when you're projecting this team going against bad teams on the road. So, listen, it's definitely positive. It's definitely all good stuff. It's just until they beat up on bad teams, I can't fully say, like, oh, they're going to, they're going to be 10 games over 500 in the second half. Like, I just can't get there.
All right, take me through it. I want and we'll get to the second round picks and beyond, but just in terms of setting the scene, Sunday, you wake up, Jack Fritz knows it's draft day. Mm. You got to wait till 7, you have the nerves, the this, the that. Take us through the day.
Well, it was a big one. I woke up, just try, like, I do the same thing on Eagles game days, is I just try to find like stuff to do so I don't have to, think about it too much. Like, Jill and I went plant shopping, trying to find more plants for our garden. I put some mulch down. All right. So I'd say we woke up, had some coffee, obviously. We went and walked to a local bakery, grabbed some donuts, of course, and then walked back, and then just started to find things to do. We went to a local plant shop, got some plants, whatever. And like, I'm kind of just texting and DMing like everyone I know in draft circles, just seeing if they've heard if Benny's going to be there at 13. So it was a lot of that, a lot of checking the phones. I was on Twitter a lot, I was on Prospects Live just because they had a live blog going of all their latest rumors and stuff like that.
One of like 4 or 5 people in there? Or?
Yeah, no, it's like I was just all in. I needed to figure out how this thing was going to play out. Watched the Phils game, which was obviously great. Was, very tense at the end. And then like around like 5:30, it was getting to the point where I was just too nervous. Like I was just finding stuff to do. Like, I went up and I did laundry and I cleaned our bedroom and I cleaned the kitchen because I was just trying to take my mind off of 7 o'clock. So I did all that stuff. I was, trying to figure out how to grow up, which is great. Literally just finding anything I could do to take my mind off of the draft. So the draft rolls around right around 7 o'clock. Sit down, I mean, Henry Davis going number one was shocking, but what I noticed early was how fast the picks were getting out before they were announced on TV. And I was like, oh, this is a disaster. I hate that. I hate it so much. And
I hate it too. It's like, why even have this on television if everyone's just going to let the picks out before? Like, I think it's like either watch it or be on Twitter, but there's no point in doing both.
Exactly. So then, I'm sitting there nervously, but everything seems like it's kind of playing out well. It seems like Kumar Rocker, Brady House, And Khalil Watson are falling, and it's like, oh, good. You know, those guys can keep falling, and Benny should fall to us at 13. And then the Rockies took him, and I was like, ah, oh, that stinks. I was pretty upset. I was like, it hurts. I get it. I kind of had this lingering feeling that he was going to go at number 8 or 9 to the Rockies or Angels, and it happened, and it sucks, but at least the Rockies have a long track record of developing hitters, so maybe I'll end up being right about Benny. And then it was scramble time. Like, when Benny was drafted 8th, it was scramble time. Because of that. Then, you know, I don't really like Brady House that much, but I had to start looking up, like, all right, how do I talk myself into him? And I talked myself into him, but then he went, but then he went number 11. It's like, okay. Kumar Rocker, I was like, man, are we about to mess around and get Kumar Rocker at 13? That didn't happen. He went to the Mets. Like, that's bull. You know,
just a big fat boo to that.
Yes. And then so I'm like scrambling, like, oh, like, what are they gonna do? And then so around pick 11 after the house pick, I turned my computer off and I put my phone on night mode, so I didn't get anything. I didn't get anything. I was fully locked in. I wanted to hear it live. Even though I really wanted to check, I knew I would get texts and DMs and all that stuff of like, oh my God, whatever. So I turned it all off and I'm just pacing around my living room. I kept the doors closed because I didn't want to see Jill see me pacing around like a madman. And I saw the pick and, oh, first off, I saw the Mariners pass on Khalil Watson. And I was like, if I know Brian Barber, like I know Brian Barber, he's going to bring me Khalil Watson. He didn't bring me Khalil Watson. He brought me Andrew Painter, which we talked last time about how this is a guy I was going to have to talk myself into, but there's a chance they're going to take
him. Yeah, he was on your don't want list.
Yes, he was on my don't want list, and I was going to have to talk myself into him. And,
yeah.
And I have to an extent, like, I'm not going to go overboard, and because he's not as good as Abel. Like, Abel is special.
Abel's a star, my friend.
He is. They nailed it. So, all right. Here's my feelings on Andrew Painter. I'm not going to go overboard. I'll try not to go overboard. fully talking myself, because I do want to give an honest assessment of him. And I'm not, like, listen, I'm all in on these draft picks. Like, I'm sorry if that isn't your style, but I love draft picks. Like, I love thinking of their upside, so very sorry. But here's the facts. He can command 4 pitches. He's been up to 99 from what I've heard. And the problem with his fastball is it doesn't have great spin efficiency. Like, he throws it hard, but like we talked about last time, like, everyone throws hard now, and the fastballs that stick out are the fastballs that have good spin efficiency and all that. And I think eventually he's going to be a sinker baller. Like, he just has that kind of look to him, you know, 6'7", gets on top of the ball. I think it comes out like in a sinkerish kind of way. But the fact that he's 18 and he can command those pitches the way he can, and like, you see it. I mean, all of his stuff needs a little bit of uptick in stuff, which I believe the Phillies PD guys can get out of him. But you the fact that he has a feel for 4 pitches, and I think his changeup's actually going to be disgusting as it keeps going on here. But the fact that he has a feel for that, he's a feel for pitching, is really encouraging for a guy his age and his size and all that stuff. So from that standpoint, it's good. And you should be able to project that he should be able to get more out of his stuff, get more spin rate, get all of that stuff. The one thing that he's going to have to work on and fix is his explosiveness. Like, his extension isn't that great. And that's probably why his fastball, like, I watched all of his starts I could find last night in all the perfect game showcases and stuff. And like, I felt like his fastball got squared up more than it should for being 97. But I do think that comes with his extension not being very long. So I think that if he fixes his extension, fixes his explosiveness, like, he should just watch tape of Roy Halladay, because they have a similar body, and the way the ball comes out is very similar. But Doc was explosive. And I think that's what Painter has to work on. So I see why they did it. I would have taken Khalil Watson because you're getting a superstar caliber player at 13. But I see why they took Andrew Painter, and I'm glad that they're betting on upside. Like, you're telling me he goes to Florida for a couple of years and he's not a top 10 pick. I think that would be disappointing. So they're kind of taking the shot on that now. The fact that he's been in big tournaments for the last 3 years, there's a long track record of him being good at these tournaments, much like McAble was. So, I think his upside is like a number 3, if I have to be honest. But, you know, having a guy that throws 98 with more in the tank for sure and a good feel for 4 pitches at 6'7 is a good thing.
Yeah, you're definitely talking yourself there. But I think people who know you can hear. You're not gaga over this. And here's the thing. Here's my biggest take. And we'll get to the Ethan Wilson, who, if you want to get excited.
Yeah.
In on Ethan Wilson. But we'll get to Ethan Wilson the rest of the class. But
you say the rest of class?
Class, draft class.
Oh, I thought you meant like classes in session.
No. I like that. Classes in session.
Yeah.
Here's my problem. The MLB draft is so stupid, Jack. I'm so sorry, buddy. This whole like slot, under slot, this team has more money. They can go over slot and still like it's so dumb. It's not fan friendly.
No.
It's not entertaining. And like just the general concept that the best players don't go for the most part, obviously it's all subjective, but in the order they should go in. And then in some cases, definitively worse players go before definitively better players because of signability issues is a disaster. Like it's a horrible, horrible product. And that's not even getting into the stupidity of not being able to trade draft picks, which is absurd on top of it. Jack, I'm sorry. I know you love this thing. It is nonsense the way this works.
Yeah, and it's like it's just like trying to explain it to like an alien coming down and explaining the MLB draft to them would be impossible. Like you're telling me that, you know, like Frank Mozzicato goes like number 7 overall over Kumar Rocker, like why? I mean, like it's just funny. It's just a funny process. And you know, sometimes players slip and everyone's like, everyone who watches normal drafts is like, well, that makes no sense. And all the MLB draft fans are like, yeah, I know. It doesn't make any sense. And like the Marlins having more money to spend on draft picks this year than like the Phillies is just weird. It's just, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. Even I can't really explain all of it. Like I follow it really closely, and even I'm just like I can't explain that one to you. I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. So
I just appreciate you not like going to the bag for it and trying to come up with some ridiculous defense for it.
No. They need to let these guys trade draft picks.
Oh, it's crazy.
I know it's tough because there's 20 rounds, and it'd just be hard to. It'd be hard to like
and manage
track
and all
stuff,
that, but still, but. Like you're a multi-billion dollar organization. Like I'm sure you could figure something out.
And it would just be so much fun. Like,
yeah, see, it would make it more interesting. Like, don't you want people interested? Like, there's a reason that the NBA and NFL drafts. And granted, we watch those guys play in college. So that's a big part of it too. But like, they're events. They're way more fun. They're way more entertaining. Like, you know, I don't know.
I got all right, you.
Anyway. Anyway, I'm done assaulting the draft. Give me your take on the rest of the class. Ethan Wilson, you know, it seems like you and me, after watching his highlights and reading about him, are not the only ones. This seems like a absolute home run of a pick. Third rounder, though, seems like a super projection reach kind of guy, you know, 17 or whatever. Where do you come down, Ethan Wilson, and the picks after?
All right. So Ethan Wilson, I think, is Max Muncy. I think he is
saying, where's my Max Muncy?
Right. He's in the second round.
For years.
Yeah, he's in the second round. So I just think that the hit tool is really strong. You know, he is a guy that does not whiff and walks and whatnot. Like he's just he looks like a very, very valuable offensive player. Like he doesn't whiff and hits the ball hard. Like that's pretty much what you're looking for. So elite bat to ball skills, probably just a corner outfielder, which is probably why he went in the second round. Was also a little bit banged up this year. That's another reason why. Because I remember when first started getting into the process, like there was a lot of Ethan Wilson to the Phils at 13. And then I think he came out slow this year, but he ended up batting like .318 with a .410 OBP. So he did heat up there a little bit. But either way, like you watch him swing, and he had a 10-pitch at bat against Florida State, and it's like, oh, this guy's a high-level hitter, and you can make the case he's already the best offensive prospect in the system, which is crazy. But
wow, that's a big-time wow on both ends.
Yeah, but he's I think he's going to be a really, really productive player, and I think I trust the hit tool. Big time power, big time exit velo, but also seems like he has a knack for getting the bat to the ball. So I think it was a massive, massive steal for the Phillies in the second round, and I'm just downright giddy. You know, and then this is what we've seen under Brian Barber, and we'll get to the rest of the draft, but like big tools, big power on both sides, and just kind of taking shots on upside rather than just playing it safe and, you know, kind of getting these guys in the hands of the Phillies player development staff. And that's one other thing. You know, I tweeted last night, like Andrew Painter's a perfect guy to give to the Phillies player development staff and let him work. And you know, and obviously High Hopes listeners know, like, what is really going on. Like, we're seeing them actually get a lot out of pitching talent and getting these guys to levels that we had not seen before. Ranger Suarez, Bailey Falter, like, that's just a couple guys. But you're seeing guys actually getting developed that didn't have the stuff that these guys have now. I mean, Mick Abel's a top 25 prospect in the sport already. Like you're seeing these guys get handed to the Phillies player development staff and letting those guys go to work. And a guy like Andrew Painter, who is obviously raw but has command of four pitches, and all you need to do is teach him more explosiveness. Like, I will bet on the Phillies player development figuring that out. So, you know, I know that the Phillies have been dogged for years and years and years about their player development and how they can't develop guys for the draft. Like, these guys have been here for, I think, what, like a year and a half, 2 years on the pitching side, and you're seeing dividends. So, you know, Ethan Wilson seems like another one of those guys where it's like, he's got good bat-to-ball skills, good pop. Let's see what they can get out of him. So I'm super fired up about him. I think it's a really good pick, and I can't wait for him to get up to the big leagues.
Yeah, I'm in. He's my new Casey Martin.
Yes.
They're my two favorites.
Nice.
I'm in on both those guys.
Yeah, I think he's a top 10 prospect in the system already.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. All right, what else?
All right, so VRs is interesting. I don't totally know how to say it. I think it's VRs. So it's interesting.
He's 17, right?
He's 17. And he's the number one outfield prospect in freaking Texas, but he wasn't in Baseball America's top 400. Like, it just doesn't add up. But here's what I'm thinking. He's an Arkansas commit. Arkansas is one of the best college baseball programs in the country. Like, they develop guys like Heston Kerstad and all of that. This guy has stupid raw power, and I just think that they got him at 17, so that they're kind of his college program in a way. Like, the Phillies, I think, are taking, and you'll see it throughout the draft, like, they're taking super young guys because they believe in their development system, and they're not letting them get to campus and have someone possibly screw them up. So it's really interesting, but either way, this guy has really good power, can drive the ball all over the ballpark. 17 years old, again, number one outfielder in Texas, but wasn't in the top 400. It's just something doesn't add up. But apparently he had a lot of helium, was a late riser. So he screams like a guy in 2.5 years that is in first round consideration, and they got him in the third. So it's a risky bet, obviously, but I think it's a worthwhile bet.
I love that. Like, I'm all right with taking shots.
Lottery tickets, baby.
And baseball projection's so hard to begin with. I mean, you're taking these kids at 17, 18 years old and trying to project how their body's going to grow, how they're going to develop, all these types of things. There's so many variables in it that are, in a lot of cases, impossible to predict, and in other cases, hard to predict, that I have no problem if you believe, and like we've talked about, one of the few things in this Phillies organization that we feel really strongly about is their ability to develop guys right now because of Ochart, because of the driveline guys, because of the whole team and all that, that, you know, it makes sense for the organization to bet on that. So I'm good with it. What else you got?
Micah Odenbright. So I found some video of him. He's another guy like Painter, although he's up to 94 already, but I mean, he's a guy that needs to, you know, use his legs a little bit more and use his body more. So seems like a classic projection guy. Don't know much about him, but again, he's 17 years old, and they're kind of betting on their player development staff and letting him develop under their guys rather than letting him get to campus and maybe not trusting those guys as much. So don't have as much on him, but just in looking at his stuff, he's been up to 94, but he's a little bit stiff with his mechanics, so you hope you can get more out of him. This is up there. This might be my second favorite. Like, Andrew Painter, notwithstanding, like, I get it. Just a guy of my kind of guys. And that is Griff McGarry. I love Griff McGarry. He walks a ton of guys, but he was starting to figure it out towards the end of his senior year. Like, 99 with an absolute wipeout slider. His fastball is disgusting. It's 99 with high spin. Slider, same thing. I don't know what he is long term, but when I watch him, it screams Roy Oswalt. Same fastball, jumps out of his hand the same kind of way. Like, towards the end of the season, had two monster back-to-back games in big college games and was fired up. I love Griff McGarry. I don't know if he's a starter or a reliever, but if you're telling me you get 99 with his elite level spin, it's just home run pick.
Yeah, his name's Griff McGarry. I mean, I didn't need superstar. Any of the other stuff.
Superstar.
I mean, Griff McGarry. I mean, that's just a
he's gonna
a
be
winning
a
name, Jack.
He's gonna be
it's
a dude.
Winning name.
They got a lot of good names. Jose
the Pena kid. Yeah,
Jose
I like
Pena
him.
Jr.
When I saw on Twitter about him, I liked him.
Very, very good. Very good. Up to 99 again. High spin. Just turned 18. But either way, like he is high spin numbers can get up to 99. He reminds me a lot of like Starlin Castillo, same kind of mechanics and whatnot. But yeah, just another big projectable arm that is young that. Just seems like he's wowing some guys down there, so that's good to see. Christian McGowan is the number one rated JUCO arm in the draft. They got him in the 7th, up to 99 again, up to 99. His changeup is nasty. I think if those two pitches develop like they should, they got, again, probably a bullpen piece, but another guy that throws hard. Same thing with Jason Roughcorn, a guy who should move through the system very fast, but 99 again. 99, which is just tremendous to see. So, again, like the fact that they're taking guys with stuff over command, just it makes me giddy. Like, they
who thought we'd see the day, Jack?
Like, they have so many power arms, and like they're already like Roughcorn 99, McGowan 99, Pena 99, Griff McGarry 99,
Painter 99.
Painter 99. I think he'll eventually get there, but yes. Like it's just power. And yeah, just the right kind of guys to give to the PD guys. Don't know much about Gavin Tonkel. Seems like an underslot guy that they're just gonna take a shot on. Speedy and all of that. And then there's Logan Cerny, who I didn't know about. Like, I mean, honestly, like the first I knew Griff McGarry was the last guy. I was like, and there's a couple other guys, but this is just strictly through Twitter and following smart people. A lot of people thought he would go in like the third or fourth round. And like he is like stupid power, explosive hips, like an explosive athlete that can play center field. The one question
you say stupid hips?
Stupid hips, like how quick and explosive his hips are.
I just trying to make sure I got the
lingo. Yeah, like just all the athleticism in the world, all the like the stuff that you want to give to driveline and let them figure out, that's what he is. The big question is the hit tool, but I will take
no biggie, right? The hit tool.
Whatever. We'll figure it out.
Is that an important tool in the tool bag?
Yeah, obviously. obviously. But, you know, I think he's a perfect guy to give to the PD guys and see what they can get out of him. Because the raw tools are special. So, overall, like they drafted power on both sides. They drafted exit velos, and like it's just my kind of draft. Like, you're betting on tools, you're betting on upside, you're not afraid to take risks, and you know that's what you want to see from an organization. And honestly, it shows a lot of faith in the guys they have developing these guys, and I think that's important. Like the fact that Brian Barber, it seems like, is in lockstep with the guys that are they're going to be tasked with developing these players. I just think that that's a sign of a healthy organization. And just pairing the arms they got in this draft with the arms that they signed last year, the uptick in velocity is just insane. So I can't wait. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to start following them. And I just like it just. I'm just giddy over here. I'm just giddy.
I could tell, buddy.
I can't wait for Ethan Wilson. When we start hearing Ethan Wilson buzz, I will be genuinely fired up.
I love it. I am all in on Ethan Wilson. That is my favorite guy in the draft class. And obviously I've really studied this as well. So yes,
exactly.
Take that. Yes, take that. All right. I have one more thing draft wise to bring up before we get to a couple last things before we get out of here. So I hate to do this.
Okay,
you know, you're on the high of the draft thing, and you know I hate to do it, but my buddy Matt, friend of the pod, listener of the pod.
Okay.
Listen to the last pod, and in the section where you're talking about the draft picks, talking about Trey Sweeney, who I have since learned is a New York Yankee now. So mm-hmm. Congratulations to yep. Trey.
Okay.
Jack, you said something. I can guarantee Jim Nance wouldn't do it, and I can guarantee that most of us would not do it. In talking about Trey Sweeney, Jack, you said Eastern Illinois.
Oh, I didn't go. Oh, okay.
Oh, buddy. I missed it in the moment, and I would love to say that I caught it. I didn't. Matt, thank you for catching it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt.
Matt sent me the timestamp, like really made it easy for me. But you said it. I went back, for those who want to check, 42-20 in the last pod, right around there. Illinois, Jack. Explain yourself.
Matt, I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Get a life, pal. It's time to grow up
Illinois!
A little bit.
Illinois!
Oh,
child?
So what?
Have you never heard of the state of Illinois before? I mean, I don't know. It's a pretty big state.
In my defense... No. I called Arkansas Arkansas until I was at least 14 years old. So it's not that surprising. Whatever. I said Illinois. I'm from Philly. You're from New York. It is what it is. Why don't you go root for the Yankees? You big New Yorker. All
see,
right.
This is you lashing out because you know you messed up.
I feel
up.
Like, I feel like, no, I
lashing out like, ooh.
You know what I feel like? I feel like, I feel
yeah,
like
you
Vinny.
Said it.
I feel like Vinny. I feel like Vinny. And this is me. this is me responding to you. So yeah, I messed up. I said Illinois. Sue me. It's Illinois. Okay.
Good. All right. Well, I just want to clear it up.
Thank
you. Yeah, I just want to clear it up. All right. One more thing from me, and then if you got anything in the take bag. Last thing from me, thank you so much to everyone who came out for High Hopes Night. It was at Four Fingers Brewing, drinking High Hops all night long. It was awesome. Not only did we get to see the Phillies actually beat the Red Sox in Boston, put up an 8-run inning. It was super fun, getting excited. That was pretty much like the only part of the game I really watched closely, that 8-run inning, because it was saying hi to a lot of people. But so many people showed up, like neighbor Dan showing up.
I know.
His buddy James, where it was a Dan and a Dave brothers who were there. It was a guy named Nick who was super nice. Charles, super nice. Like, just met a bunch of awesome people. And, you know, it really meant a lot to us. We appreciate it.
I signed a ball. You know,
finally, we signed a ball. That was for Dave. That was for
finally,
Dave.
We finally
Dave
made it.
Yes. And tell them what you signed it with. What did you say?
2-0 in the high school playoffs.
Yep. And then I didn't know what to say. And he said, you should sign it with yo.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's awesome. You're right. I
should. So
first baseball I've ever signed in my life. So yeah. Thank you for that, Dave. Yeah. What an experience.
Hopefully not the last one. You know, I think if the Phils are going on a run here and they're still playing good baseball, I'd love to do it again. You know, maybe before the year is over.
100% in. It was a blast. And if you have not gotten a chance, go down to Four Fingers Brewing. Check out the beer. High Hopes in cans. People took some High Hopes cans. Oh, Darren from South Philly was there.
Todd.
It was a blast. So thank you to everybody who came out. It was really awesome. We'll definitely do it again. All right, Fritzy, take back. If there is anything, we hit a lot.
Don't have much, but I feel like I can't let this podcast go by without giving an official statement on Nick Pivetta. And
that's a bad job by me. I forgot to put on my notes because I was like, I won't forget to talk about Pivetta.
Turns out you forgot
right.
to talk about Pivetta.
See, look at that. You just spun around. I ripped you for Illinois. You showed up at a job I did.
Yeah.
Leaving this pod.
Yes. So
Should we just call him Hothead Pivetta? Should we call him?
He was fired up, wasn't he?
My like, man is like, not great at pulling it together. When well, he used it.
And like not backing up the base was
hilarious. He felt like, wait, dude, that was so classic. That was amazing.
Yeah.
He wanted to remind all of us, High Hopes listeners and fans, he did just for us, that why we know why you had his back to begin with. You were the same person. He was you on the field in Fenway.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I was watching and I was like, yeah, this is why I love them.
I get it. Same You're guy. Like, yep, I see this. Yep.
We were the same guy. But listen, I think he looked pretty good, you know, until obviously it all blew up. But he's got some stuff. I would take him back. I would take him back. One more chance with Nicky P. But yeah, it was funny watching him. It was funny. I was conflicted. And then they scored and I was like, all right, good. Let's just blow him out. So I did not want to, you know, see him get, you know, torched, but it was good. It was a perfect Pivetta start. He was nasty and then it blew up in his face. It kind of calmed down a little bit. But yeah, he is a little too emotional for me.
A little?
Yeah, a little.
He is like, dude, man, you are never going to be as successful as you want to be if you can't get that under control. I mean, it's such a mental game out there, especially on the mound by yourself, you know, like it's a mental game. He is a hothead, dude. He just can't control his emotions.
Yeah, yeah. He's a fired up Canadian guy.
Yeah. It's like an oxymoron.
Yeah.
All right. Well, shout out to Nick for letting us win. We really appreciate it.
Needed it. Are you taking the over or the under of 519.5 for furthest home run tonight?
I saw this. I was like, 519?
Yeah, that's insane.
That's really far, man. It's really far. I'll take the under.
Wow. I'm taking the over. It's humid, winds blowing out.
More important question. I guess it's Colorado. I forget that. More important question, who's going to win?
I think Soto. I just think he's going to get on a roll, and it's going to be like, oh, my God, Juan Soto's
He's the best hitter of the group, of the eight. He's the best. I just think it's Gallo. He's so locked in right now. I think he's homering like 11 of 12 games coming in, and he's – the most powerful of all of them, which, yeah, I know that sounds crazy, but I think he is. It's him or Shohei. I'll go Gallo. That's my prediction.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. I'm going to lock in. I am in on the home run derby. Of course, many right remember the scene of the crime of my most famous tweet of all time.
Oh, yeah.
So that's fine. Someone tweeted me about
that. You going to rip Pete Alonso tonight?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going after Pete.
That's what you do on Twitter. You just like riling people up.
Yep, that's me. Everyone knows.
Yep.
I'm a troll, as they say, Jack.
That you are.
My daughter obsessed with trolls. Oh, not online ones.
Yeah.
Actual trolls. She loves Billy Goat Gruff, Jack. You into Billy Goat Gruff?
Big fan. Is he a draft prospect?
All right, what else you got?
That's it, pal.
Yeah, I think we've reached the point. I think that was the point right there. That was the point. There's one parent out there listening to this being like, Billy Goat Gruff, man. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, big fan. Sure, whatever. I'm a bigger fan.
That person is my person, all right? That's how I feel.
You can say Billy Goat Gruff or whatever, and I'll raise you Griff McGarry.
Yeah, Griff. Billy Goat Griff McGarry. Uh-oh. New nickname. Love it. Love it. But we are an Ethan Wilson podcast and a Mick Abel podcast.
Yeah, we nailed Mick Abel. Yeah.
We knew it from the jump.
Yes.
All right. We done?
Yeah.
All right. One more time. Thank you to everyone who came out for High Hopes Night. It was super, super awesome. And we can't wait to do it again and meet more people. So until then, he's Fritz himself. We'll see you later.